Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this this session on health economics. I want to introduce Mr. Alex White, who's going to chair the session. We have had a tradition at these conferences of having a politician come in a chairing role so that they hear the debate and maybe want to say some things about it. The way this session is going to be run is that all three papers will be presented and then there'll be a discussion about the three papers. That's how they've decided to do it. Could I just mention that we have, the names are on the rostrum, we have Paul Gorecki at the far end, Anne Nolan, who doesn't have her name, unfortunately, in front of her. She's like another, but she's Anne Nolan. Charles Norman, who's working with Anne on the same paper, Dave Madden, and the Minister. So, Minister, thank you very much for taking... I know everybody says taking the time out of your busy diary to come today, but actually, I can't have given your diary today. It was an exceptionally busy time to be able to fit this in, so we're delighted to have you here, and we'd like to get the session rolling.
Good. Thank you very much. Can I be heard? Is that okay? Thank you for that introduction, Francis, and thank you for inviting me to be here this afternoon to chair this very interesting seminar. And we have, as you know, four very distinguished contributors to hear from. You certainly don't want to hear from me, you want to hear from them. And we might, we will, I'm sure, have some opportunity for discussion after we've had the presentations. So I think what we should do is progress immediately into our first paper, which is to be given by David Madden, UCD, entitled Health and Wealth on the Roller Coaster, Ireland 2003-2011.
David. Thank you. I can't see anything. Oh, this is what I look at, is it okay? You don't mind.
Just not at all.
Of course. Thanks.
Can you see it?
I can see it, yeah, John.
This is what I used to bring it on. Okay. Okay,
that's good.
Just lodged.
Okay, it's Philip gone, is he? Does that go into the So just to give you a broad outline of my presentation, I think I was told to speak for about 20 minutes. So that's what I'm trying to do. Broad outline of my presentation, I'm going to look at developments in income and health poverty over the period from 2003 to 2011. I put the word poverty in inverted commas there because given the health measure that I'm using, you can't really use the conventional measures of poverty to look at health poverty. But we do our best. That's why I put the inverted commas there. I'm looking at poverty in both dimensions, both health and income, and I'm also looking at the correlation between the two. And that point is important because we might be concerned about a situation whereby, suppose 20% of the population were in income poverty and 20% of the population were in health poverty. Well, we will be concerned to know what the overlap between them is. Is it the same 20% of the people that are in poverty in both dimensions, or is it a different 20% of the population that are in poverty in a single dimension, or, as is the case we have here, where there's a bit of overlap but not complete overlap. So the correlation between the two is important. I'm going to look at this issue from a time series and a cross-sectional perspective. What I mean by that is I'm going to look at kind of aggregate changes over the 2003 to 2011 period, but I'm also going to look at the correlation between health and income within each cross-section. So that is what we sometimes call the socioeconomic gradient of health. Broadly speaking, what we find is that, and I don't think this will be a great surprise to you, is that income poverty falls up to 2009 and then it increases. Health poverty, though, is broadly speaking unchanged. There's a slight dip towards 2008 and it picks up again a little bit, but as I'll show you with some of the graphs, it's not a change that I would regard as being either statistically or even economically significant. So I'm going to suggest that health poverty has remained pretty much unchanged. There's some evidence that inequality in health has decreased slightly in the last 3 to 4 years. What we also find, and I think this is one of the more interesting findings of the paper, is that the health income correlation amongst the poor appears to have declined. And I'll show you some graphs which will hopefully convince you of that. Now, there's a more detailed version with lots more bells and whistles available in the on the UCD working papers site, which you can access if you want to go into it in more depth. Okay, I still have to use this. Okay, not to worry. Okay, before I start presenting some results, I want to just run through the context of this work. So there's quite a bit of debate about whether recessions are good for your health. And in an influential paper, which was published back in the year 2000, Christopher Room said, yes, it appears as though if we look at the correlation between various measures of health and the economic recession, it appears that mortality is pro-cyclical, in the sense that when the economic cycle is at its peak, we observe higher rates of mortality. Now, it's important to bear in mind that not every cause of mortality is going to be pro-cyclical, and not every dimension or measure of health is going to be pro-cyclical. But the Room study showed that mortality from things like motor traffic accidents, from cardiovascular disease, associated with excess smoking and drinking and poor diet, they seem to be pro-cyclical. There was some evidence that suicide was contra-cyclical, in other words, that when the economic cycle is bad, then you're more likely to see higher rates of suicide, and that cancer deaths appear to be kind of neutral across the economic cycle. Now, he published another paper, kind of a follow-up paper, in the year 2013, and he suggested that in more recent years, really since about the turn of the millennium, that this correlation between mortality and the recession appears to have, to a large extent, disappeared. So that there doesn't seem to be any relation between overall mortality and the economic cycle. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't still relationships for certain subparts. The traffic accidents, the cardiovascular disease, they still persist to some degree, but he finds that cancer deaths, this is in the US I should add, cancer deaths appear now to be anti-cyclical, so there's lower cancer deaths when the economic cycle is doing well. He speculates this may be owing to resource constraints because cancer treatment has become increasingly more expensive, so people are less able to afford such cancer treatment when the economic cycle is not going so well. But he stresses that this is speculation. And it should be added that the Room results have been replicated for other countries. So it's not just a specifically US phenomenon that he's looked at. An influential paper came out earlier on this year by Chang and Stuckler in the British Medical Journal. And I think it made the front page of the Irish Times, so it must have been important. And it said that the Great Recession, in other words, the recession we've had since 2008, led to a substantial number of excess suicides. Now, without going into the details, I think there were problems with that paper, and one of my colleagues, Kevin Denny, although he hasn't published it yet, has written up a short note which I think really puts big question marks over that analysis. It's not also entirely consistent with the work of Brendan Walsh and Dermot Walsh, who looked at this issue for the period up to and including 2009. What they found was that there did appear to be an influence of unemployment on suicide for younger males, but that not for any other age group, and that probably the predominant influence on suicide was actually alcohol consumption. And alcohol consumption tends to go with the economic cycle. So when the economic cycle hits a downturn, there's less alcohol consumed, and that has a dampening effect upon suicide. There's other work that's been done by people like Angus Deaton and Brendan Walsh again, and they find a difficulty in terms of getting a clear relationship between measures of subjective well-being and the economic cycle. Okay? But the important point that I would like to stress is that different dimensions of health may respond differently to the economic cycle. So to talk about health in general, I think, is probably not terribly helpful. Ideally, you'd like to focus in on specific dimensions. Now, what I'm looking at here is a specific measure of health, although it's a measure, I suppose, of somebody's general health. It's self-assessed health. It's micro-based, so this is individual-level data, which we have from the year 2003 to 2011. And then I also look at, as I said, the income health correlation within a given cross-section. The second slide I wanted to just talk about in terms of context is some general comments about how you measure welfare and how you measure poverty across a number of different dimensions. So I don't think it's too uncontroversial to state that we would like to measure welfare, and we would also like to measure poverty across dimensions other than just income. People can suffer deprivations in areas other than just income. Now, one of the difficulties when you start trying to measure deprivation across a number of different dimensions is whether you take what's known as the intersection or the union approach. Now, what we mean by that is the intersection approach means that somebody is only considered poor if they are poor in all of the dimensions we have identified. So let's say we identify five dimensions, you're only considered poor if you fall under the threshold for all of those five dimensions. The union approach is where you're considered poor if you fall under the threshold for just one of those dimensions. So you can be any one of those dimensions. Now, one of the problems with this is that, especially if we've got more than about three or four dimensions, the number of people whom we identify as poor under the intersection approach tends to be very, very low. Implausibly low. Like, you might get numbers like only 2 or 3%. On the other hand, if you look at the fraction of the population whom you would identify as being poor under the union approach, in other words, you just have to be poor or deprived in one of those dimensions, you get an implausibly high fraction of the population who are designated as poor. So this is the problem that really bedevils this literature. And one attempt to overcome this has been worked by Alkira and Foster. And what they do is they say, well, as well as having cutoffs or thresholds for each individual dimension of poverty, we're also going to have a cutoff in terms of the number of dimensions. So if you have five dimensions, you might say, well, you're poor if you fall under the threshold for three of those dimensions or two of those dimensions. Now, the advantage of the Alkira-Foster approach and of other multidimensional indices approach is that it does give you a single number. And it's always helpful if you can think in terms of a single number. You can graph it easily. You can say, well, it's gone up, it's gone down. But it can also be criticized on the basis that, well, perhaps it's a bit of a black box. You've got all of these different pieces of information. I've gone into a black box, we press a button and one number comes out. And then there are issues to do with the weightings of the different types of deprivation. Maybe a nice way to think about this is think about the dashboard of a car. Okay, so there's many, many bits of information you'd like to know about when you're driving your car. So one possibility is you've got a dashboard with 20 different pieces of information. That's not very helpful because you kind of get confused trying to work out what exactly is going on. Another possibility is they can aggregate all this information into one single number. So as you're driving along your car, you just see a number like 0.8, but then 0.8, gee, what does that mean? Am I going too fast? What's my fuel gauge, etc.? So just one single number also is not always very helpful. So another approach to this is an approach associated with Martin Ravalian, who's the chief economist with the World Bank. What he says is, well, look, why not have what we call a dashboard approach, whereby we isolate what we think are two or three of the most important factors, whether it's in the case of a car, it's probably your speed, the amount of fuel you've got left, maybe the temperature of the engine. In the case of poverty, we identify the two or three most important dimensions of poverty. We look at those individually, and then we also look at the correlation between the two. Okay, so that's what we're going to do in this presentation. We're looking at health, we're looking at income, and we're going to look at the correlation between the two. It really works for no more than about three indices, because as the number of dimensions goes up, clearly the number of items on the dashboard goes up and it gets confusing again. Now, one point I should make is that this paper primarily focuses on measurement. So I'm not trying to look at explanatory or causal factors. Okay, I'm happy to talk about those, a conjecture about those, but this is primarily an exercise in measurement. Okay, what's the data that I use? Well, the data that I use, and what defines why I chose the period 2003 to 2011, is because those are the years for which this data is available. It's the Survey of Income and Living Conditions. It's a nationally representative sample with lots of information on sources of income, deprivation, and also a measure of self-assessed health. The income measure that we use is equivalized, so we're taking account of the size and compositions of families, equivalized disposable income, so it includes social transfers, and it also includes deductions for tax and deductions for pensions as well. Okay. The health question then is the response to the following, the health information is the response to the following question. In general, how good would you say your health is? And you're given five categories, from very bad up to very good. Now, for people who haven't come across these sort of measures before, I think they sometimes treat them with a degree of scepticism, but such measures are commonly used in the health economics literature, and they do appear to be good predictors of subsequent morbidities and subsequent mortalities. Plus, in terms of silk, it's the, pretty much the only information on a health output that we have. There are some information on visits to doctors and visits to dentists and things like that, but in terms of an assessment of how your what the health result or health outcome is, it's the only one that's available in Silk. Now, one of the problems, well, one of the drawbacks, I guess, is that the health question was only asked to those people who were age 16 and over. So our analysis is confined to people aged 16 and over, which means we lose a certain fraction of the sample each year. But on average, the sample size is about 10,000 per annum. So it's a reasonably good spread of people, big enough to pick up, hopefully, statistical significance, and it's also nationally representative.
So let's take a look at some numbers, first of all, okay?
So these are numbers of the poverty measures. So classically, there are three income poverty measures which are used. There's a poverty, there's a measure which is just a headcount measure. That's the blue index. There's a measure which also takes account of the depth of poverty. That's the red index. And then there's the green index, which takes account of the depth of poverty with an extra weighting placed upon the very, very poor. And what I've done here is I've indexed them so that they were equal to 100 in the year 2003. And I'm using a fixed poverty line. The poverty line is 60% of median income in 2007. Okay? So the poverty line doesn't change over time. So there's nothing here that I think is very surprising. Poverty falls up to and including 2009. Well, some people might think, well, 2009 was already a year into the crisis and yet poverty fell. The reason was that in the budget of late 2008, which applied to 2009, social welfare payments were held. The nominal increases were not taken away, they were held. And at the same time, we actually had price deflation, so prices were falling, so there was quite a substantial real increase in the value of many social transfers. So that's why we get a further fall in poverty in 2009. But then what we see is that poverty increases from about 2009 up to 2010, 2011. So there's nothing new here. It very much echoes the type of work and results that have been obtained by Tim Callan and his team at the ESRI.
For those of you who don't like fixed poverty lines,
this is what happens if we have a relative poverty line. Very similar broad trends. The falls are not quite as
exaggerated or not quite as intense, because clearly the poverty line itself is moving as income moves. I'm going to skip that slide, okay? Health poverty.
So, as I said, measuring poverty in the context of a self-assessed health measure is a little bit problematic. We can only measure it on what we call the headcount basis. So we had five categories of health, if you remember. It was very good, good, fair, bad, very bad. So our choice of cutoff points is very, very limited. Realistically, the realistic cutoff points would be anybody who says their health is fair or worse, or anybody who says their health is bad or worse. They're the two potential cutoff points. And here's the information. So for fair or worse, which is the higher of those two thresholds, right, we see that the number kind of bobbles along and then starts to dip about 2006. It reaches its lowest in 2008, and then it picks up again between 2009, from 2009 to 2011. But it doesn't change very much, okay? And if you look at the figure for those who rate their self-assessed health as bad or worse, once again, we don't really see much change. And just to kind of stress that, what I've done here is, this is the figure for the higher threshold, and I've included the 95% confidence intervals. Okay, so as you can see, particularly if you look at where it reaches its lowest in 2008, and then where it is in 2011, there's not much change. And given the sampling variation, I would contend that there isn't really a statistically significant change in health poverty. Certainly as the recession has progressed between 2008 up to 2011. Okay, so the story so far, income poverty falls up to 2009, then increases. Health poverty broadly unchanged over the same period. That grid I didn't spend time because we're a little bit behind time. The results there suggest that health inequality would have fallen from about 2009.
What happens when we look at health and income poverty together? Okay.
So this graph looks at the change in income poverty for four different groups. And the groups are partitioned according to their answer to the self-assessed health question. Now, the number of people who rate their health as very bad is actually very, very small. That fraction is very small. So I've amalgamated them with the group who say that their health is bad. So what you can see is in 2003, Okay, for those people who stated that their health was either bad or very bad, just under 60% of them would have been considered to be income poor, where those who have very good health, less than 20% of those would have been income poor. And that's not surprising, because we generally expect that there's a correlation between health and income poverty, and that correlation, if you like, is kind of captured by the vertical gaps between these graphs. Okay? So income poverty, as we know, improved up to about 2009, so everybody sees an improvement, but look what happened. It's not just that there's an improvement, but there's also a convergence. Okay, so we see bigger falls in income poverty for those in the poorest health, and while we see falls in income poverty for the very people in very good health, they're not as pronounced. And then when we see the turnaround in income poverty and it starts to increase, it seems to increase at pretty much the same rate for each group. Okay, so the recession in terms of income, it's hit all of the health groups, seems to have hit all of the health groups with more or less the same type of impact. What about those bi-dimensional poverty indices that I talked about? As I said, you can have an intersection approach or a union approach. Now, with only two dimensions, actually, life becomes much easier. The red line there shows the fraction of people who were defined as both income and health poor. The orange line at the top shows those who are defined as either health or income poor. And then just to make life easier, I've included the individual health and income poverty measures, the green and the blue ones. So if we look at the intersection approach, we see, sure enough, there's a slight pickup in the intersection approach for poverty, but that's almost all explained by the increase in income poverty, which is the green line. Now let's think about that in a little bit more detail. As more people become income poor, okay, if that income poverty was randomly distributed across the population, it would fall upon some of those people who are health poor. So if there's an increase in income poverty, we know that there will be some sort of an increase in intersection poverty. Okay? And the increase in intersection poverty that we observe is pretty much what you would observe if the increase in income poverty was randomly distributed across the population. So the increase in income poverty, kind of supported by the previous graph, the increase in income poverty does not seem to be concentrated amongst those who are in health poverty. That's why I'm suggesting that the correlation between income and health poverty amongst the poor appears to have declined over the period under review. Okay, so what I've got here, remember I sent you the dashboard approach was I show you the income measure, the health measure, and I'd show you the correlation measure. So this is the correlation measure. This is a Spearman correlation measure because it looks at the correlation between people's ranking in terms of income and in terms of health. Because remember, the health measure we have is an ordinal measure. It's not cardinal. The numbers themselves have no real significance. So what we see is a slight fall in the correlation for everybody. That's both poor and non-poor. But look at the correlation for the income poor and the health poor. Okay, there's a bit of jumping around, but it has declined quite significantly. I haven't given figures for statistical significance, but I can tell you that the red figure for the income poor was statistically significant, but once you get around about 2007, 2008, the statistical significance disappears. Okay, so basically we're seeing no correlation between health and income for those people who are income poor or for those people who are health poor. Now, when I discussed this, first of all, with one of my colleagues, Brian Nolan, Brian said, well, maybe what's happening is that if we think that people over the age of 65 have been relatively protected during the recession, these are people who you would generally expect to have lower health. Okay, so if they've done well in income terms and they don't have great health, maybe that's what's causing the correlation to diminish. So I ran the same analysis for the under 65s, and what you see pretty much is the same thing is happening. And just to do it on a more defined age groups, Silk only gives you a more defined breakdown by age from 2006 onwards. So this is just for the last 5 years or so, well, up to 2011. This is for the 25 to 49 age group. Once again, we see that it is declining. The same for the 50 to 64 age group. So it's not just an old age type phenomenon. It seems to be happening amongst younger people as well. So to summarise, there's no evidence, from what I can see using these measures, that the recent recession has been
accompanied by any meaningful deterioration in self-assessed health. There also seems to be a slight diminution in health inequality. The correlation between health and income, if you like, that the gradient within those people who are poor also seems to have declined. Now, caveats. These are only two dimensions of welfare. There are other dimensions of welfare. There are other measures of deprivation which you could use, and they would perhaps tell a different story. In particular, you might want to look at other health measures. Okay, so this is a very specific type of health measure. Finally, this is also early days. So it's possible that the health effect of the recession might not be seen until a number of years down the road. Okay, but for the moment, anyway, the evidence we have up to and including 2011, my interpretation of it at least, is that the health income or the recession has not been associated with any great deterioration in self-assessed health. That's